You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. No-bid oil contracts in Iraq. What are U.S. intentions long-term in Iraq? Or the subject of honesty, we want you to join the conversation here on The Takeaway. 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can leave your story of, is honesty particularly important in the last moments of life? If you're a doctor out there, tell us a story or give us some guidance on this difficult question. You can also email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. Dr. John Marshall at Georgetown University Hospital, good morning.
Good morning.
If I were to ask you to think about the toughest moment between you and a patient in your clinical career, does a particular scene or a particular moment come to mind?
Oh, it sure does.
Dr. John Marshall is Chief of Hematology and Oncology at Georgetown University Hospital. And, you know, it is worth reminding people that more than 1,500 a day die of cancer. And among those people who are dying have very, very special, complex, and difficult relationships with their physician, who is often the most important next to family individual there in the last weeks or months of life. We asked Dr. Marshall to join us this morning to talk about this particularly important moment and the clinical sort of oversight of how doctors learn to deal with patients at the end of life. Dr. Marshall, first of all, describe your toughest moment and how you dealt with it.
Well, actually, it was a few years ago, pretty early in my career, and it was one of those mistakes that will forever live with me. Part of it is being the messenger. I mean, I think a lot of times you do get shot as the messenger. In this particular case, it was a young man who started his week with just some funny feeling in his abdomen. The next day he gets a scan, the next day he gets a biopsy, and by the end of the week he is showing up in my office, not really sure what to expect. And the young man said, well, doc, is it cancer? And of course I answered him very bluntly and very honestly, yes. And the next question was, well, doc, am I going to die of this cancer? And unfortunately, the answer to that also was yes. And he was one of these guys who was just asking very black and white sorts of questions that in the end, the answers to them threw him into more and more of a depression. And I think of that as a mistake because I told him the truth. I told him what he was asking. But quite honestly, there was a lot more to the story than the way his questions were leading the discussion.
So you wouldn't have been dishonest in that situation if you had to do it over again, but you would have added more information and told it in a different way? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Back the guy up and say, you know what? Yeah, this is a bad disease, and yes, this probably will be the end of your life, but no, there are things that we can do to slow this down, and yes, there are going to be some good times and bad times, but this is not the immediate end of your life. He left that office thinking, you know, just total devastation.
Dr. Marshall, how clinically prepared were you for that moment based on your long, long training?
Well, you think that you're prepared for everything you're going to see, but quite honestly, I've been at this for a while, and every morning when a clinic starts, I know there's going to be some surprise, some manhole out there that, you know, you can step into because it's people are different. People bring to the clinic a different set of expectations. This is incredibly powerful information that we're handing out. This is life and death stuff, not only from the initial diagnosis of, oh, you've got cancer, to the monitoring of these patients over the years. And then the cancer comes back, and that, of course, is a very powerful, very meaningful moment and discussion. And then the one that's sort of been the more recent focus of, well, what is the end of life and when does one stop treatment? And
wow,
each of those moments and each, well, frankly, each clinic day to day carries with it a discussion, information that has to be shared that's clearly going to have not only an influence on that one patient that you're talking with, but frankly has what I like to call the ripple effect across that whole patient's world, their work, their family, and everyone else.
Dr. Marshall, do you mind if I ask you when you thought you were actually getting reasonably good at this? Was it a particular
maybe
patient?
Maybe next year someday.
Maybe next year.
You do get better at it. It is it is a lot of what the calling for an oncologist is. I think, you know, people ask, why would you do that job? I wouldn't do anything else. I think these are patients that need information in an honest and caring and kind way. They need context to it. And the reason I say, you know, we're never really good at it is that any single discussion with a patient could always go on. There is always more information we could talk about. And in today's world, unfortunately, we've got to keep moving. And so, you know, there isn't really a single patient encounter that isn't cut short in some way that we could do a better job.
It's kind of like a radio show.
Yeah,
there isn't an interview that isn't cut short.
Dr. Marshall, Adora Udoji here. Were you surprised by the American Society of Clinical Oncology's survey showing that a third of terminally ill patients had not had that end-of-life conversations with their physicians? And do you think that your personal commitment to this has to do with your personal experience?
Yeah, no, I'm not really surprised. I think the study, in a sense, takes a snapshot of what is a long-term relationship. A patient and their oncologist has a long-term relationship. And in fact, when an oncologist decides to have the so-called talk with a patient to say, okay, we've done all we can do, there's nothing more, that's different for different patients. There isn't a right time for a given disease or for a given patient, because we have to remember that these folks have developed certain defense mechanisms, if you will. They, you know, I think about the patient who spends their time in clinic taking notes, doesn't show much emotion in clinic, but writes it all down. Then you get the other patient who sort of jokes it all off or you know, ignores it, head in the sand sort of approach.
Well, to sum up then, in the limited time that we have, I guess it's about embracing the experience, not so much studying this moment like you would study a piece of tissue or a cell.
That's right. You're actually interfacing with a patient.
Wow.
And trying to make the best decision on with that patient as to how to tell them the information. Some patients don't really want to be told the final information, even though I realize that the article stresses that, you know, patients do want to hear these things. Frankly, many patients, when they are told that, find a sense of hopelessness. The thought that there was some treatment out there was their defense mechanism, if you will, to keep on fighting, keep on living.
You know, I hate to do this to you, but is there a particular patient that comes to mind that you're dealing with right now who's handling a particular challenge? We just have a few seconds, but still, I just wanted to have a face in my mind before we say goodbye.
Well, it's really an everyday thing. I've got a patient who has is suffering with metastatic pancreas cancer. And
what's her name? First name?
Her name is Eileen.
Well, we wish her the best. Dr. John Marshall, thank you so much for sharing your stories and your clinical insights with us.
Glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
Dr. John Marshall is Chief of Hematology and Oncology at Georgetown University Hospital. The end of life. Honesty or what?
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.